Okay, so imagine you've been staring at the exact same completely tangled architectural problem in your company's back end for, I don't know, months.
Oh, yeah. We have all been there. It is just completely soul-crushing work.
Right. It drains your will to live. You're trying to refactor this critical service, and it's just so tedious. So you finally decide to just hand the whole spec over to an AI.
Which is the dream, right? You fire up Claude Code or whatever tool you use and you let it rip.
Exactly. You feed the problem in, you hit enter, grab a coffee, step away. And when you sit back down at your desk, the AI has handed you this flawless, completely pristine refactor.
Like zero bugs, every unit test passes on the very first try.
Yeah, it looks like an absolute masterpiece. But here is the kicker. The author of today's source material actually lived this exact scenario.
Oh, really? So they actually got the perfect code.
They did. They read through it twice just to make sure they weren't hallucinating it. And then they
Yeah.
completely killed the entire thing.
Wait, what? They just threw it in the trash?
Straight into the trash. They deleted it and started completely over.
I mean, throwing away perfectly functioning, bug-free code that completely flies in the face of how we are all told productivity is supposed to work right now.
Right. Because, as the author realized, the AI solved the problem that was written down. Like, it solved the literal prompt. It did not solve the problem the team actually had in reality.
Ah, okay. The invisible canyon between the prompt and the actual business reality.
Exactly. And that gap is exactly what we're exploring today. So welcome to the deep dive. Our mission today is to unpack this really fascinating essay titled, "The Frame is the Bottleneck."
And that essay actually builds on some really groundbreaking ideas from Dan Shipper's essay called After Automation.
It does. And the mission for you listening today is to understand a super counterintuitive truth. We're going to figure out why the AI revolution is actually creating more work, not less.
Yeah, because we were watching leaders automate away these massive chunks of execution, and yet somehow their teams are just drowning in more work than ever before.
So whether you are trying to use AI to, claw back some free time on a Friday, or you're a leader staring at your team's workload wondering why it's spiking, this deep dive is going to fundamentally change how you view your job.
Because the bottleneck to getting things done is no longer execution. The new bottleneck is the frame.
Right. So to understand why that perfect Claude Code refactor got thrown away, we have to look at how we are actually collaborating with AI.
And most executives are visualizing this setup entirely wrong right now. They over-index on what the author calls mode one AI work.
Okay, so mode one being like the agent employee model, right?
Yeah, exactly. It's your classic customer service chatbot. You give it a friendly name, it sits in Slack or Zendesk, and it just deflects those basic tier one questions.
Like, how do I reset my password or whatever?
Right. That's the version the C-suite pictures when they announce this big enterprise AI strategy. But the real tectonic shift in productivity is happening in mode two.
Which is human agent collaboration.
Yes. Mode two is where a human and an AI share the exact same workspace. You're looking at the same IDE, the same browser, the same files in real time.
So using tools like GitHub Copilot Workspace or Claude Code, you aren't just handing off a task to a digital intern and going to lunch.
Exactly. You are locked in this continuous rapid-fire loop of specifying and then reviewing and refining. The agent does the typing, but you do the framing.
Which brings up this great concept from the text. Kieran Klassen coined a term for this workflow shape called a human sandwich.
I love that visual, the human
It's
sandwich.
so good. So the top slice of the bun is the human writing the initial spec and the acceptance tests. Then the meat in the middle is the AI executing the task.
Right, writing the code or drafting the document.
Yeah. And then the bottom slice of the bun is the human returning to judge those results, extend them, or feed the errors right back into the top slice for another loop.
And the thing to realize is that the execution part, that meat in the middle, is no longer the hard part. The AI just collapses that middle layer almost instantly.
So the breakdown happens at the top slice. That initial framing is where the perfect code gets ruined.
Oh.
But let me push back on this terminology for a second.
Sure, go for it.
When we talk about the human providing the frame at the top of the sandwich, isn't framing really just a dressed-up corporate buzzword for writing a slightly better prompt?
It sounds like it, but no. A prompt and a frame are fundamentally different things.
Okay, how so? Like if I tell the AI, make sure you write this in Python, isn't that framing?
Not really. A prompt is simply a request for an output. A frame is the explicit shape of the entire work environment.
The shape of the environment.
Yeah. A frame includes the constraints, the invariants, which means the things in the system that absolutely cannot change under any circumstances. It includes explicit non-goals and hidden risks.
Ah, okay. So it's basically situational judgment.
Exactly. It's the silent context a senior professional carries around in their head all day.
Like when a senior engineer looks at a bug, they aren't just thinking about the exact syntax to fix it.
Right. They're thinking, if I change this data pipeline, will it break the billing system downstream? Are we bound by some random GDPR rule here?
Or what happens if the third-party API drops its connection halfway through?
Yes. A prompt just says, fix the bug. A frame explicitly maps out that entire minefield surrounding the bug before anyone takes a single step.
So the AI can do all the typing, but the human has to build the scaffolding that keeps all that typing safe.
Which perfectly sets up the ultimate paradox of the AI era.
Right, because if the AI is collapsing that massive chunk of execution in the middle of the sandwich, doing all the typing and heavy lifting, why is everyone's headcount still climbing?
It makes no sense on the surface, right? Why does the judgment load feel heavier now than it did when we were doing all the typing ourselves?
Yeah, why are we more stressed now?
Well, we are watching a classic economic principle play out in real time called the Jevons Paradox.
Okay, break that down for us.
The Jevons Paradox basically states that when a technological advancement makes a resource cheaper and more efficient to use, the consumption of that resource actually goes up, not down.
Oh, wow. So because it's cheaper, we just use way more of it.
Dramatically more. AI has made yesterday's expert competence practically free. And because the execution layer is suddenly cheap, the demand for execution just expands wildly.
You know, it's exactly like the highway expansion problem.
Oh, that's a great analogy.
Yeah, so a city has terrible traffic, right?
Yeah.
So the local government spends 5 years adding 3 new lanes to the interstate to, quote-unquote, cure the congestion.
Because they think more space means faster commutes.
Right. They effectively make driving cheaper in terms of time and friction.
Yeah.
But the moment those new lanes open, it just invites thousands of new drivers who previously took the train or just stayed home.
Yep. And suddenly you have a massive new traffic jam, just on a much wider road.
Exactly. We aren't doing less work with AI. We're just managing a much bigger, faster highway.
You haven't eliminated the traffic at all. You've just shifted the bottleneck. And we've seen this throughout the whole history of technology, really.
Like with the compilers, right?
Exactly. When compilers were invented, people assumed they would eliminate the need for programmers. But it just abstracted away the machine code and created a massive global appetite for software engineers.
And the shift to cloud computing didn't fire the IT operations teams. It just commoditized physical servers and created cloud architects.
Right. Every new layer commoditizes the layer below it and then creates a desperate need for expertise at the layer above it.
But the difference this time is the sheer speed of the cycle, isn't it?
Yes. In the past, the shift from a new tech dropping to a new layer of expertise forming took a decade. You had time to, you know, read a book, take a course, adjust your whole career.
Now that cycle runs in quarters. The benchmark model you master in January is completely obsolete by July.
The source material captures this reality so perfectly. It says, models climb frames, leaders build them.
Models climb frames. I love that.
The AI is constantly climbing up and absorbing the frame you just built yesterday. So your job is to keep building the scaffolding higher, framing new problems faster than the AI can collapse the current frame.
Okay, so if the workload is expanding and we're managing this massive new highway of AI output, companies obviously need a way to scale their framing.
Right. They have to keep up somehow.
And the knee-jerk reaction I see absolutely everywhere is, let's just give every single employee a personal AI sidekick.
Ah, yes. The custom bot approach.
Yeah, like you build a custom bot, I build a custom bot, and we all get faster. But the author actually calls this out as the personal agent trap.
Because it's a strategy that looks amazing on paper, but it is almost universally doomed to fail in practice.
Why is that? I mean, it sounds great.
Well, the author points to a publication called Every as a Prime Case Study. They are a highly technical 30-person team using cutting-edge AI.
Okay, so they know what they're doing.
Exactly. They tried this exact strategy, giving every employee a personal agent tailored to their daily tasks. And within a very short period, they had to pull all of them back.
I'm guessing they pulled them back because individuals just don't have the discipline or time to maintain them.
That is the core issue.
Because, like, you build a custom bot to draft your weekly reports, but then your company's formatting guidelines change, or the database API updates.
And you are way too busy doing your actual job to go in and fix your bot's back-end logic, so the personal agents just go stale incredibly fast.
Because humans stop updating their context.
Right. The author points out that agents are software, and if you treat agents like Lambda functions you forgot you deployed, they will rot.
Just to clarify for anyone unfamiliar, a Lambda function is just a tiny piece of serverless code running in the background of a cloud environment, right?
Exactly. If you deploy it and forget about it, eventually an external system it talks to will update and the function will just quietly break.
And AI agents do the exact same thing.
They slowly drift out of alignment with the reality of the business. Software requires telemetry, evaluations, an on-call rotation, and a backlog.
It's like the difference between me fixing a leaky faucet in my kitchen versus trying to maintain the entire plumbing system for a 50-story commercial skyscraper by myself.
That is spot on.
Like, I can handle the faucet, but the skyscraper needs a dedicated facilities team. A personal bot is fine for drafting a polite email to a vendor.
But in a Fortune 100 multi-cloud environment, where you're interacting with massive code bases and vendor ecosystems that are shifting daily,
an individual simply cannot manage the compounding complexity of an agent's context.
If an AI agent actually matters to the business, it cannot be owned by an individual. It needs a product owner.
It needs someone who literally gets paged in the middle of the night when the agent starts making, as the author describes it, expensive nonsense with confidence.
Expensive nonsense with confidence. It's so true. An AI initiative that relies on individuals quietly maintaining their own bots on the side will quietly die in 18 months. It requires a dedicated AI engineering function.
Okay, so if personal agents just sit there and rot, how do we successfully scale human judgment?
We have to capture it permanently.
Because if the human framing is the most important part of that sandwich, we can't just have that context living silently in one senior engineer's head.
Exactly. And this introduces one of the most powerful concepts in the text, Dan Shipper's idea of smuggled intelligence.
Smuggled intelligence. Okay, unpack that.
When you look at a massive AI benchmark like OpenAI's GDPVAL, which measures how well a model performs complex audit sampling on financial crime metrics, you look at the incredibly high score and assume the model itself is just this deep financial genius.
Right, you think the AI is just naturally brilliant at finance.
But if you actually look at the prompt that achieved that score, it is not a simple question. It is a massive, multi-page wall of rigorous expert constraints.
Oh, I see. The human expert is packing the prompt with everything the AI needs to know before it even starts.
Yes. They are defining the specific confidence levels required, the tolerable error rates, the entity risks, the weightings, the formatting rules.
So by the time the AI actually touches the problem, the human has already done like 90% of the intellectual heavy lifting.
They've mapped every inch of the territory. The benchmark ostensibly measures the model, but the score actually reflects the competence of the framer.
And forgetting this reality leads to what Shipper calls chart psychosis, right?
Chart psychosis, yes. People stare at a graph of AI performance going straight up and start making wild, sweeping predictions about the end of human labor.
Completely ignoring that the only reason the AI performed that well is because of the incredibly tight expert human framing that surrounded it.
Exactly. Take away the expert's smuggled intelligence and the model's performance just collapses.
So, practically speaking, how do we capture that smuggled intelligence in our own daily work and make it permanent?
Because you can't just stand over an AI's shoulder whispering constraints all day.
Right. I've got my own job to do.
The author proposes a structural solution called the context spine.
The context spine. Mechanically? What is that?
Mechanically, it is a versioned markdown file, just a plain text document that lives right there in the codebase repository, right next to the actual code.
Okay, so before an AI agent runs a task, what happens?
The system automatically injects this markdown file into the AI's context window. It forces the AI to read all the encoded invariants, the acceptance criteria, the known traps, and the non-goals.
Before it generates a single line of code.
Exactly. Furthermore, because it's versioned in the repo, it gets reviewed and updated by humans just like any other piece of software during a pull request.
You know, it sounds exactly like giving a newly licensed teenager the keys to a car.
Uh-huh. How so?
Well, a weak frame or a bad prompt is simply tossing them the keys and saying, go to the grocery store. You might get your groceries, or they might take the highway, panic, and total the car.
That is a very real risk.
But a context spine is like a checklist taped to the dashboard. It says, take the back roads, do not exceed 40 miles per hour, keep the radio off, and if the check engine light comes on, pull over immediately.
I love that. One just asks for a finished task and crosses its fingers. The other actually protects the system from the agent's inexperience.
The author actually gives a fantastic technical example of this difference, too.
Yeah, the refactoring example.
Right. A weak frame says, refactor this service to simplify the retry logic. That's tossing the keys and saying, go to the store.
But a context spine injected into the prompt says, refactor retry behavior without changing idempotency guarantees, without increasing downstream pressure during partial outages, and with explicit tests for duplicate message handling.
And for the non-engineers listening, idempotency just means making sure that if a system accidentally sends a message twice, it doesn't trigger a duplicate action.
Like charging a customer's credit card two times for the exact same order.
Which is a business-ending mistake if the AI gets it wrong.
Exactly. The first prompt just asked for cleaner code. The context spine actually protects the entire production system from collapsing.
It takes the senior engineer's judgment, makes it explicit, auditable, and reusable.
And it allows that framing to scale across 100 different AI runs without losing the thread.
So I buy into the context spine completely. I think it's brilliant. But as someone who has worked in large corporate enterprises, I know exactly how this plays out in reality.
Oh, I think I know where you're going with this.
Right. A VP of engineering hears a deep dive like this. They hear treat agents like software and create a context spine, and the enterprise immune system immediately kicks in to kill any agility the team had.
Yeah, they create a 47-page governance process.
They stand up three different architectural approval boards. They build some depressing SharePoint site that takes 10 minutes to load just so you can log your AI prompts.
And suddenly nobody wants to use the AI anymore because the bureaucracy is suffocating.
Exactly. The whole point of AI is speed. How do we govern this new workflow without destroying the velocity we're trying to gain?
Well, the author warns explicitly against that heavy-handed governance. In this new era, governance absolutely must be lightweight.
So what does that look like?
It should look less like a quarterly review board and much more like CI/CD, continuous integration and continuous deployment.
So small, automated checks running continuously in the background, close to the actual work.
Exactly. You do not need a committee approval process to ask an AI, what does this basic Linux awk command do?
Right. Let the developers move fast on the execution layer.
However, there is a hard line. The moment the AI touches production logic, security posture, customer experience, data movement, or regulatory exposure, the frame must become durable and documented.
Okay, so what does this actually mean for a listener who leads a team right now? Because the old metric of success used to be headcount.
Or output volume, like how many lines of code or new features did your team ship this week?
Yeah, but how do we measure success in a world where an AI can generate a million lines of code in an afternoon?
If you stick to those old metrics, you will actively harm your organization. Measuring lines of code today is like measuring a factory's success by how much exhaust smoke it produces.
That's a great way to put it. So, what are the new leadership mandates?
First, you must measure throughput per framer, not just headcount.
Throughput per framer.
And that throughput metric has to heavily penalize rework. Because if an AI ships a feature fast, but it breaks downstream systems because the frame was weak, that is negative throughput.
That makes total sense.
Second, you must invest your budget in framers, not finishers. The scarce, valuable skill is no longer typing the syntax. It's shaping the business problem so that AI can finish it safely.
So you're essentially promoting the people who sit at the top of the human sandwich.
Exactly right. Third, you have to treat agents as an internal platform.
Meaning a dedicated AI engineering capability with clear ownership.
And on-call rotations, not just hobbyist teams playing around in their free time.
Right.
And above all, you have to look at the work your team is producing and ask yourself one foundational question.
Which is?
Can we explain the frame the AI operated inside? If you can't explain the constraints and the business logic the AI used to generate that work, then you do not have an AI strategy.
As the author brilliantly puts it, you have vibes with a diff.
Vibes with a diff, it is the best phrase.
For the non-coders, a diff is just the file showing the changes made to the code. So vibes with a diff means you've generated a bunch of code based entirely on a feeling.
With zero documented business constraints anchoring it to reality.
That is a terrifying way to run a company.
But it's the exact scenario we started with. The perfect code that had to be thrown in the trash because the vibes were right, but the frame was completely wrong.
Right. So to pull all of this together for you listening, The bottleneck to getting meaningful work done is no longer execution.
It's no longer your ability to type fast or master the quirks of a specific tech stack.
The AI handles all of that, faster and often better than we ever could. The true bottleneck is the frame.
It's the human ability to define the constraints, anticipate the risks, and map the deep contextual reality of the problem before the machine takes over.
So true. And, you know, the author closes the essay with a lingering thought that really anchors this whole discussion.
Oh, the Hasidic story.
Yes. Share that because it's perfect.
So it's an old Hasidic story about a man who is so worried about losing his clothes that before he goes to bed, he writes down exactly where he puts everything.
He makes a detailed list.
Right. He writes, his cap is on the chair, his pants are draped over the desk, his shoes are by the door.
He's basically writing a context spine for his wardrobe.
Essentially, yes. So the next morning, he wakes up and uses his list. He finds his cap, he finds his pants, he finds his shoes, he puts them all on.
The execution phase was a success.
Exactly. But then he looks around the room and asks, but where am I myself?
Wow.
The models are going to find your cap. They will find your pants. They will eventually execute every legible, documentable part of your daily job.
But the part of you that decides what actually matters today, for this specific customer, in this specific market, balancing these specific undocumented human risks, that is you.
The bottleneck isn't the stack. The bottleneck is the frame.
Which leaves us with a fascinating and honestly, maybe slightly terrifying question to end on today.
I know exactly where you were going with this.
We started this deep dive looking at a perfect refactor that had to be trashed because it lacked human context.
Yeah.
And we learned that the solution is the context, spine writing down our constraints to keep the AI safe and aligned.
Right.
But if AI eventually handles all the execution and your sole job is defining the constraints of what truly matters, what happens when we eventually try to write a context spine for our own human judgment?
Can we even do that?
Exactly. Can we ever fully articulate why something matters to a machine without losing that human element entirely?
That is the ultimate framing problem we are all going to face very soon.
Definitely something to mull over the next time you sit down to write a prompt. Thank you for joining us on this deep dive into the architecture of modern work. It's time to stop finishing and start framing.